Welcome to the Superhero of Love podcast. I am Bridget Fonger. I wrote a book called Superhero of Love, Heal Your Broken Heart and Then Go Save the World. That book is going to be out in January 2019, but I didn't want to wait until that time to start talking to superheroes of love. And guess what? Here's the news. You are a superhero of love. And through talking to other superheroes like yourself, tapping into that little superhero inside of you, I'm hoping that you and I and all of us start feeling more and more like superheroes of love, meaning that we love and are loved more than ever before. So welcome. Let's get this party started. All right, so we are here today with Nina Lores Collins, who is a true superhero of love. You guys are going to start hearing about how she's a superhero of love, and you're going to hear from the superhero of love herself. But welcome, Nina. And I'm about to introduce you fully, but welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yay. So Nina is a writer and an author of a New York Times bestseller. She has a history as a publishing scout and then as an agent. She also has a master's in narrative medicine at Columbia University, and she's a life coach even. And I met her because I went in May, Nina, I went to the Los Angeles event where you spoke with Annabelle Gurwitch and Sandra Singh Lowe. I'm a huge fan of theirs. So I was like, there is no way I'm missing them both on the stage at the same time. And who is this Nina person? And I didn't have time to look you up beforehand. And I was like totally and completely blown away by you and the community that you've created, and ordered your book, obviously, instantaneously, and also joined the Facebook group that you are so famous for and from which your book was born. So I'll let you tell them a little bit about this Facebook group and your book, both of which I adore. And hold on, let me just say this. Both of which have helped my heart, right?
Oh,
yeah.
I'm going to hear more and how. I'm curious.
Yeah, I'll tell you more about that after you go ahead and tell them about your...
Okay, great. Well, everything you said is true, except the book is not a New York Times bestseller.
Okay, wait. When we were at the event, do you remember this? When we were at the event, somebody came back on stage. Was it actually Andrea Grossman who came on stage and said that? So let me stop and just say who Andrea Grossman is. Andrea Grossman, for those of you who are in Los Angeles or in Southern California, basically, Andrea Grossman created something called Writer's Block, and I had no idea that it was created over 22 years ago. I did not discover this until I went to an event of a friend. And then your event was soon after Nell's, and I've basically become addicted to writer's block. But you were the next one that I went to. Andrea Grossman started this featuring writers and authors. And I swore she came back on the stage and said that you were just put on the New York Times bestseller list. No?
No, but maybe she was talking about Sandra or Annabelle, who are both definitely thrilled to be there with that huge honor. And the story is, as you know, so basically like 2.5 years ago, almost 3 years at this point, in October of 2015, I was 46 and I wasn't sleeping well, and I was kind of having, all sorts of feelings around aging. My kids were growing up and leaving the house, and my body was changing. And I kind of wanted to create a space online where I could just talk to my girlfriends. Really, I was kind of looking for, like, a funny, self-deprecating place to just talk about body issues, like chin hair and back fat and insomnia, which all turned out to be symptoms of perimenopause, which was something I, until that point, really didn't know anything about. And, perimenopause, I'm not sure how old you are, but if you were at our event, you're probably in our demographic. And if you're in the group, you're certainly in our demographic.
Sandra, just a tidbit. Sandra, Annabelle, and I are all the same exact age.
Oh, cool. Nice. Okay. Great. Yeah. So you're all a teeny bit ahead of me on this.
Yes.
This roller coaster. So perimenopause, is that stage kind of before, leading up to menopause, where your periods start getting irregular and you start to have all sorts of symptoms. So I basically started this Facebook group, and I called it What Would Virginia Woolf Do, and I made it a secret group. And the name came about because we were kind of joking, me and a bunch of my girlfriends, about what we should call it, and my friend Margaret actually threw out What Would Virginia Woolf Do, which I thought was hysterically funny. At the time, I was in graduate school, and I was reading a lot of Virginia Woolf, and I was writing a paper actually about To the Lighthouse. But it's obviously just a dark joke. We all of my friends are kind of feminists and big readers and kind of super literary. And Virginia Woolf, of course, committed suicide in her late 50s. So the joke was, you know, should we just throw in the towel and kill ourselves? I often joke that had I known I was going to, like, the group would grow and grow and I was going to go on to write a book, I probably would have called the group something different. But I didn't know. And this was, you know, completely an exercise in just kind of, you know, looking for kind of support and girlfriend wisdom. And basically the group just kind of took off. It grew very quickly from, you know, friends to friends of friends. You had to be invited to join for a long time, for about 6 or 8 months. So it was completely secret. No one could find it. And, you know, I live in Brooklyn Heights and Brooklyn, New York, and people would come up to me at dinner parties and, like, whisper and be like, are you in that group? And, you know, it became this, like, kind of cult addictive thing that, like, all the women in my community were really obsessed with. And as it grew, I kind of realized that we had, you know, inadvertently tapped into something. And basically women, it started as a forum to talk about health issues, but has evolved, as you know, since you're in the group, into a place where women really talk about kind of everything that women over 40 are concerned with, or at least a certain kind of cohort of women. It's very smart women who are, I think, pretty much across the board, I would hope, identify themselves as feminists. And we talk about sex and relationships and our children, our relationship with our parents, you know, our partners. We have a fair number of gay women. It's kind of diverse all around the country. I think the common denominator is the women are really quite intelligent and hopefully funny. We really try and keep it a place where we can laugh at ourselves, even though a fair amount of kind of crying and super heart-wrenching stuff goes on in the group.
Mm-hmm.
And we also treat it a little bit like Vegas, even though it's grown tremendously. So now, 2.5 years later, it's 21,000 women all over the country and even around the world. We have subgroups all over the country, regional subgroups, and we also have a subgroup in Europe and London, and we have women in Israel. So, but we do try and keep a kind of vow of confidentiality. There's an idea that, like, what happens in the group stays in the group, and we take it very seriously. If people, you know, you're not allowed to kind of name names or recount stories, and because we want it to be a place where women can really be supported and learn from each other and be raw.
Yeah, I didn't know about all the, I just asked to join one of the subgroups today for Southern California, but I didn't even know about how many subgroups there were until this morning. I'm so blown away and so excited. I mentioned earlier this thing about how it's helped my heart, and I believe this is why I wanted to invite you on this podcast, is I believe you are number one in the business of helping people heal, helping women heal their hearts. This is an extraordinary act of love and kindness, right, that you have created here. In my book, I have this concept of the love league, and bring people in to be in your love league to support you through. My book is Superhero of Love, Heal Your Broken Heart and Then Go Save the World. So it's about healing from a broken heart in any way that it has been broken or needs mending. So one of the tools that I used when I was mending a broken heart was creating a love league, meaning I had people that I could depend on for whatever I asked them to be dependable for. So for the first few months, it was make sure I don't call him. I know I don't want to call him. Can you make sure I don't call him? So I would have people that I could call and say and just talk, like, I feel like calling him. Talk me out of the tree.
Yeah,
that kind of thing.
Really, it's a really good one. I had a horrible breakup this year, so I totally relate.
I know. Yeah, that's okay. So yeah, and that, but you have created a love league, basically this concept that I have in my book of this community, and I love that what stays in the group, what is said in the group stays in the group. You really feel that. You feel so safe in there, and people can say literally anything about any body part or about any what would possibly be conceived as shameful feeling about their kids or their husbands or their whatever. So it's such a nurturing environment. So I just wanted to say kudos to you because you created that. I mean, you set the tone, and you set the tone. You regularly post also, which I want to commend you for, because that keeps the tone so loving and so open and so beautiful. Anyway, I just want to acknowledge
you. I really do kind of believe in this idea that we shouldn't be nearly, I mean, we shouldn't be ashamed. I think women, people in general, but women are so, there is so much shame that goes on that I think really limits us. So, you know, just is kind of something I've always naturally felt, so it was easy to bring to this, and that definitely is the idea behind the group of kind of like, we may feel shitty about all these things, and if we can talk about it and be honest about it, it's going to help us deal with it in a much better way, in a much healthier way. We can laugh at ourselves. We can realize we're not alone. We can figure out the solutions, you know, and move forward in a stronger way.
I love the subtitle of your book. So the title of her book is the title of her Facebook group, which is What Would Virginia Woolf Do? And the subtitle is, And Other Questions I Ask Myself As I Attempt to Age Without Apology, which is that. And it really is. It's the shame apology factor of aging is so huge. I was thinking about this the other day. I have a group of high school friends. There are six of us, and we once a year we go to a friend's beach house, and we've been doing this for like 13 years now. And it's been the one little outlet where we can all talk about aging in the way that your group does, right? But we don't carry it. It's interesting that we don't carry it throughout the year. And, you know, it's like, kind of like we lay it all out on the line in this one moment. So that's another factor. Like the normalizing and the bringing it into
the thing that really, I mean, it's that's actually really surprised me how, like, the number one thing, you know, because then I drove across country this year after I had this terrible breakup in the fall, and I drove across country and kind of went and lived in LA for 4 months to kind of get away a little, and my kids are mostly grown and no one was home. And so I met a ton of women. The women in the group call themselves Wolfers, and I met so many Wolfers going across country and then on this book tour. And really the number one thing people said to me was, you know, it makes me feel normal and less alone. I think so much of our experience is so common, you know, things you think are just you and they're just not.
So tell me about how you held your own heart. Let me just say something about that too. That's like this thing of helping each other hold our hearts. Like that, it's just making me cry right now thinking about it, because that's like one of the huge things that the group does. Like, wait, let me help you hold your heart. It's just so beautiful. And my follow-up question to that is, can you tell us some about what you did to hold your heart in the aftermath of this big breakup?
You know, I mean, the group has actually been hugely helpful to me. It's kind of amazing. It's almost hard to imagine my life now without the group. I mean, when I started it, I was in my second marriage, and I was going through kind of empty nest stuff, and the group helped me with all sorts of health things and kind of psychological things around feeling less relevant, you know, kind of general aging things, and certainly a lot of like really good just, you know, what do I do about all these supplements and what am I doing about whatever, various health things. But then I had this unexpected breakup. So it had not been an easy second marriage, and then it ended very suddenly with kind of an incident. And because the group had grown quite a bit at that point and my book was coming out, I was starting to feel a little, we've all been so open in the group, and but I didn't want to get him in trouble in the group. I didn't want to be too public. I felt like I was like, I didn't want to be disrespectful to him, but I also really wanted support. So we have an anonymous feature in the group, and I used it during the first few weeks of the breakup.
That's great. That's fantastic.
And women were hugely helpful. I mean, I was dealing with some issues that were really common, you know, alcoholism, violence. I mean, there were. And so I was able to kind of write about what had happened, and it was really incredible. I mean, women who had very, very similar experiences kind of wrote in with support. You know, everyone told me, you know, the usual breakup things, never speak to him again, never, you know, blah, 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 never do this. I mean, one of the nice things about the group, though, is I say this a lot on my tour, like, you know, I have a lot of close girlfriends, and so I have many people I can call when I'm in a crisis. But the thing about going into the Facebook group is that you're getting all these really smart women who don't have an agenda with you, don't know you, so really speaking out of kind of their depth of like wisdom and intelligence and giving you their kind of unvarnished opinion. Mm-hmm. And so not everyone necessarily agrees. And you know, you're not usually – it's very rare that a long thread will have one – like we had one today where everyone felt the same way, and then we closed comments because it was like 500 comments, and everyone agreed like what was the course of action. But often you'll get a very – you'll get a kind of mixed bag, and it was hugely helpful to me. I felt so understood and seen, and I felt like, wow, these women have been – I had never experienced what I went through. I'd never been with anyone who had had alcohol issues. So there was a lot that I thought was unique to my experience that really wasn't at all unique to my experience. And realizing that it was kind of textbook and that I was being interacted with or reacted to in certain ways that were just so unbelievably common made me feel stronger. I mean, not that it's, you know, been easy, but so that was the initial thing. And then, you know, just really throughout the year, I mean, again, it's you know, getting advice for how, like, I'm always in relationship. I'm one of these kind of, you know, chronically, I guess isn't the
serial,
but it's serial. Thank you. Serial monogamous. Chronically monogamous.
That was excellent.
And, you know, for years, my therapist and friends have been saying, maybe you should spend a little time alone. Maybe you should spend a little time alone. And so the Wolfers have really helped me in that way, too. I'm on a little bit of a, what I kind of jokingly calling a man diet this summer. I'm really trying hard to not get into any kind of committed relationship and just be by myself more. And that in some ways has come from just feeling like they can't keep telling me this. I can't keep ignoring them. I know they're right. I know, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of women must be right.
Yeah. I loved this. There was a recent thread about, I think it was you that posted it. I always get so confused by who's posting what and when they're anonymous.
Yeah, those ones are really tricky because I post my name and then so people, sometimes people have joked, they're like, wow, that woman has a lot of problems. They're not
with
me.
No, I see it. It's just this one I happened to read too quickly and I thought it was you and I was like, wait, what are you talking about? You look so hot and so young. What is this about? Like somebody who was perceived as older than they were. And I was like, because Nina, for you right. Podcasters, podcast listeners, you don't know that she looks way very young for her age even. So the recent post that I was mentioning is the one about, am I done with men? What did you call it?
Yeah. Well, there was a great, so one of our moderators, a woman named Stephanie Ganji, who wrote a novel that's terrific called The Next, wrote a piece for our website. We have a website called thewolfer.com, Wolfer with two O's. And she wrote a piece about being post men, and so it's a phrase that we use a fair. It comes up fairly often in the group. Kind of, you know, will I reach a point where I'm done? You know, am I done? Mm-hmm. Have I reached that point? And I think for the most part, a lot of us are say no, or sometimes we feel like, well, yeah, maybe we should become lesbians, or maybe it's going to get easier next time around, or you know, it's not at all that we're in a space of being negative or, around men. I think we're just being honest about the difficulties of having relationships. And sometimes it feels like for me right now, I feel like the smart course of action is to hit the pause button in a big way and really look at what I've done. Because I feel like, you know, like all of us, I mean, there are various ways I do well in life and various ways I don't do so well. And the man thing has been hard for me. This last one's been really hard.
I've read and listened to a lot of interviews that you've done and read a lot of interviews you, so I'm going to screw up whether I heard something or read something, okay? So, but one of the things that I heard or saw was that you feel like you're repeating out of some childhood wounds and looking for your dad. I feel like some breakups cut us so to the core so that we are actually like ripped open and we have to look inside. We have to shine the light inside of the dark spot. Did this, in other words, where the relationship ending is doing you an enormous spiritual growth service. Did this one open you up a little bit more differently than the first marriage ending?
You know, it's so hard to say, right? I'm 10 years older than when my first marriage ended, and I certainly hope so. I mean, I'm noticing because I've been dating, and I'm really trying to pay attention to the kinds of men that I'm drawn to and the kinds I'm not drawn to and what that's about. And I don't know how much of it is really changed. changeable. I think it's, you know, a matter of trying to find something that's a little more workable. I really don't know. I did read the book Broken Open both times during both divorces, that amazing book.
Oh, my God. I don't even know that book. That's how, oh, my God, I should definitely
God,
know about
know
that book.
Book.
That's crazy that I don't.
It is like the number one fantastic breakup book. Wait, I'm going to have to Google it right now because I can't.
Oh, my God, I have to order it, obviously. And shockingly, I don't remember that being in my book proposal competition page.
Oh, well, she's talking about all different kinds of pain. It's Elizabeth Lesser, I think.
Oh, yes. Oh, that is in there, and I haven't read it. Oh, my God, and I love Elizabeth Lesser, actually, so.
I feel like as you get older, and I don't know if it's just me or everyone, for me, I mean, this breakup has been harder than I expected. We were only together 3 or 4 years, and, you know, we didn't have children together, and but it's just been hard on the kind of, yeah, I mean, I think it's the accumulated feeling as you get older of just feeling like, oh, I'm still fucking this up. Like, you know, how did I do this? Like, it's, you know, it's one thing when you're 30 and there's a lot you haven't figured out, but by the time you're 50, you just feel like, shouldn't I be better at this?
Yeah.
And you know, also, how much time do I have left to try this again? And do I have the energy? And do I have the, like, I'm a very open person, as everyone knows. And even I feel a little bit shut down from this. I just feel, you know, just like, ugh, I don't know.
Like weary-hearted?
Yeah, just kind of weary, exactly. You know, I really did love him, and I really did, you know, do whatever. All the things that, you know, all the things that disappointment does to us. But I think I guess it's just sometimes it's depressing to be this age and feel like, oh, my God, am I going to be still making the same mistakes when I'm 70? Like, am I going to be still learning the same things? And unfortunately, I think that is the way it is.
Yeah, I think for some issues, it is indeed that way. And the journey that I went on to write my book is precisely where I was, and right about your age, actually, of like, okay, I thought I was so evolved, actually, too. I was really cocky about my own personal and spiritual growth up to that point. And it's like, are you kidding? I was just slain on the playing field. Like I said, I mean, I really do. It cut me to the core in such a way where I was like, okay, I am now going to dive into the dark little shadow parts. I went to a shadow workshop with Debbie Ford. I don't know if you know Debbie Ford's work.
No,
do you know Debbie
no.
Ford? She brought Jungian shadow work to the masses, basically has a bunch of bestseller books. She passed away a few years ago, but her work is lives on through the Ford Institute. And a couple of years before she passed away, I went to the shadow process, and that right after this breakup, and I was kind of like, oh, there's stuff inside that I have not shed light on that I thought I had shed light on, but I had just kind of peeked in and hadn't really dived in. So that's what it spurred me to do. That's what I was talking about with the, you know, cut me to the core.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Like, this is, but it was a huge blessing. Like, I wouldn't have it any other way now.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
I'm sure I'll feel that way. I mean, I do already. I mean, it's also just interesting how, I mean, I'm just not someone who really ever looks back very much. So
mm-hmm.
I do feel like better things await. I mean, generally, I'm a pretty optimistic person, and I feel like we learn from things and then we, you know, we get better from them. But this has been, and I'm also probably just really tired, like publishing a book and growing this group and traveling book tours. So it's been just a big year. And it's July, and I'm actually out at the beach right now, and I'm taking a week off and resting.
Yeah.
I'm feeling more rejuvenated. So I think it is, there's probably some of it is just also kind of with age, you need to take better care of yourself, and it takes a little longer, and, you know, all that kind of self-care stuff.
I totally agree, especially when you're dealing with a heartache, that the rest of your body needs even more attention during those times. I agree.
Yeah.
What are your favorite self-care practices?
Well, we're doing a 21-day wellness challenge in the group, so I've been meditating mostly every day, although I kind of screwed up the last couple of days. But we've all, like, chosen our – we have this big, long thread, and we've all chosen our own wellness. Mine's very simple. I'm trying to meditate and do a 60-second plank and drink 64 ounces of water every day.
Oh, fantastic.
So I didn't really feel like – I mean, sometimes I go through a period where, like, I won't – you know, I don't drink alcohol for 30 or 60 days, or I don't eat sugar, but I'm not doing that right now. I feel like it's summer, and I feel like not worrying about that. So, but my wellness things are kind of the same as everyone else's. Probably, you know, sleep more, drink more water, exercise, do yoga, you know, mostly kind of just be a little peaceful. Figure, I mean, one hazard of this new life I've fallen into with Virginia Woolf is that I'm online like all the time. Figure out how to limit that, and it's tricky because the groups, as one of our moderators taught me the terminology, Facebook is a flat landscape. So we now have like 24 groups. So like there are regional groups and subject groups, and there are the admin groups. And so I'm in and out of all these groups all day, and that can get, I mean, I love it. I really love the women, and I find the conversation super interesting, but it is overwhelming. And it might one day, I don't really know where we're going, but it might one day make sense for us to become like a network, like an app where it,
mm-hmm.
everything speaks to each other better.
Oh, that's great.
One of my self-care things is really just trying to limit. I just hired an assistant, which is super exciting. We don't really have much income from the group. We have a teensy bit. We're just starting to maybe, but I really decided I needed help. I was just working so hard and super tired.
Good for you.
So I just decided to invest in some help, which is great. So, yeah, you know all those things, like just knowing our limits and what we need.
And you've got even more going on than just the group and your book tour. Notes from a Black Woman's Diary, Selected Works of Kathleen Collins. So Kathleen Collins is Nina's mother, who passed away in
1988.
Okay, I was going to say 89. I was only 1 year off. And Kathleen Collins, her mother, was an extraordinary writer, poet, filmmaker. And I know you've done a few projects, but I just noticed that that book is coming out in February 2019.
I'm super excited about it. Thank you for mentioning it. Yeah, my mom was a Black independent filmmaker primarily, and she died when I was 19, and her work was not known at all. And about, I don't know, time goes so quickly, I think 5 or 6 years ago now, maybe 4 or 5, I had her film Losing Ground remastered and released. And I was mostly just doing it for our family and for kind of academics, but it ended up getting some really wonderful attention, and because of that I was able to sell a collection of her short stories that had been literally like languishing in a trunk for 30 or 40 years that no one had ever seen. So that book is called Whatever Happened to Interracial Love, and then in February of 2019 Echo is publishing a book called Notes from a Black Woman's Diary, the Selected Works of Kathleen Collins, and it's like a couple plays and a couple screenplays and some stories and a section of her unfinished novel, and it was a treat for me to edit that book.
And you were doing that when you were coincidentally with the Empty Nest timing, weren't you? It's just occurring to me. Yeah.
It was. Yeah. I mean, it's funny. A lot of this stuff is interesting. The last 5 years has really changed my relationship to my late mother. It's interesting. I think, first of all, the resurrection of her career, the kind of unexpected success of her career and the role I played in it, it's incredibly satisfying, right? It was very sad to, you know, have her suddenly become kind of famous and she's dead. Mm-hmm. It made me feel, you know, it was really a huge accomplishment. So it made me feel kind of very, like, good and powerful in my own life that I was able to make this happen for her.
And you essentially win Best Daughter Ever Award.
I definitely, it's pretty amazing. And then, you know, even though it was completely inadvertent, but it is amazing. And it was why I was glad on this new book to be the editor of it made me happy to kind of say, like, because I chose some letters and I actually wrote a teeny bit in this new book. And but then also she died when she was 46, and I'm now going to be 49 in August. So this has all been happening as I've been kind of crossing the threshold of the year that she died.
Mm-hmm.
And I started the group when I was 46. And I really do think now in retrospect there's something to that. I think, you know, I'd always had my mother kind of ahead of me, you know, when I was in my 20s and 30s and having children. And my mother was like this woman who had died at 46, and I kind of knew what she looked like until that point. And then suddenly I turned 46, and I don't have her in front of me anymore. She's behind me. And it's a liberating feeling, actually. I dreaded it and was kind of quite depressed when I hit that year, and, you know, when I died too. But overall, I've found it to be really liberating. I feel like I have kind of moved past her. And I just had this moment the other day where I was thinking about her at 46, and I thought, oh my God, she was so young, because of course, you know, 49. So yeah, I no longer feel as haunted by her death. I mean, I miss her still all the time, and I'll still sometimes, like if I'm sad about my breakup or I'm sad about anything, I'll sometimes cry and, you know, wish I could talk to my mother. I'll always miss her, but mm-hmm. I don't feel as deeply kind of, I don't know, angry, confused, upset by her death. I feel like some of it has been resolved for me.
You mentioned somewhere also that she dealt with her own depression and pain and things in her life with a do-do-do modus operandi. Are you in doing the research for the book, et cetera, and contemplating her so deeply over the course of years, are you looking at how you are mimicking her? And I mean, because we all do that. We mimic our parents.
Yeah, no, I definitely have. And, I have some, obviously, misgivings about that. I mean, I feel it's impossible to parent and not compare yourself to the way you were parented, for good and bad. And I think actually lots of her bad parenting qualities I share.
I doubt it, though, because you're so aware. I mean, don't you think you're just super aware of them? I mean, you know,
yeah,
of the tendencies?
I mean, you know, you say, like, we feel like we're aware, but then I went and, like, married someone who was completely, like, not a good idea for me. So I don't know. How aware are we? I don't know. I do think I'm aware. I've gotten better. I mean, also, my kids suffer from the fact that I had them so young, which is good and bad. But, I had my first kid. I was pregnant with my oldest daughter when I was 23. I had my last one when I was 30. So, there are great advantages to that. I'm young and they're all out of the house. But if I was having them in my 40s, they would have benefited from, you know, years of therapy and more wisdom. And instead, they got a very young mother who was completely kind of crazy, traumatized from her childhood and her mother's death. And, you know, so I was processing a lot of stuff while they were really young. And then I think there's just general, like, you know, my mother was really smart and interesting and funny and outspoken, and I think I have some of those qualities, so I think there's, like, some good, but then, you know, distracted, self-centered. I don't think I'm quite, I'm not the artist my mother was. My mother was really, really kind of one of these, like, depressed, serious artists. She wrote every single day. So I think in that way, my kids are better off. Like, I've been a much better kind of functioning mother. I'm much, mm-hmm. much more attentive to detail, and I'm much more attentive to, I think, how they're feeling. And I think it's all fine. You know, everyone, no one's parenting is perfect. No one's childhood is perfect. But
yeah, no, and honestly, I mean, it keeps popping into my head that you should interview your kids, because I bet you, you'll feel better about yourself if you interviewed your kids.
Maybe in 10 years. No one really wants to interview, like, a 17-year-old about their parenting.
But yeah, maybe, oh, my God, it would be so fascinating, though, if you did it now and then you did it in 10 years, too. At 17 and 27, that would be hilarious.
Well, if someone does that, keep it in the vault. I'll listen later.
I should do it behind your back. Or somebody should do it behind your back. Somebody that loves you, knows and loves you, should do it behind your back. That would be great. Oh, okay, idea for people that know and love Nina very well. Please do that. Somebody do that. Speaking of motherhood, I would love to hear how you, there was a thread actually about those of us who are not married and have never had kids. And then I was saying I never wanted to have kids, and I knew that I didn't want to have kids. And but that being said, I can completely empathize for some reason. I can empathize as if I have been a mother with mothers, and my heart breaks in two for friends whose children are going through something incredibly painful, and they want to hold that pain for their child, right? And that maternal instinct to, can I please take this away from you? So I would love to hear how you, for the mothers out there, some tips for helping your children hold their hearts. How do you?
It's so hard. It's so hard when they're struggling. You know, I think I don't have anything that original to offer. I mean, I think keeping the dialogue open is hugely important, but it's really hard. Some kids really don't want to talk, and you know, when they're adolescents, they're often angry. I guess the one thing I really try and do, sometimes with greater success than others, is have a sense of humor about it, because some of what they do, you know, one therapist once reminded me, I was really angry and upset about one of my children, and the therapist reminded me that a lot of it is developmental. Like, you can put them into therapy and you can try and reason it and you can try and understand it, but some of it is, a kid at 16 is going to be different when he or she is 19 and 20. Like, there are just developmental things going on that you really have to ride out. And, you know, and kind of like we see in the group, like, a lot of what we go through, a lot of what they say to us is, like, textbook obnoxious, difficult. You know, a lot of what they do, like, it's not original to you. It's just, you know, it's just what's going to happen. So trying to look at it with a little bit of humor can be helpful. And, you know, another thing a therapist once told me was that I should apologize frequently, or as much as one feels the need to your kid, to the kids. So, you know, for things that you didn't do so well as a parent, things that you wish you'd done differently. Like, my I don't talk to my father, who's still alive, and he has just never been willing to kind of apologize to me or explain to me anything about my childhood. And I feel like I can't just pretend it wasn't the way it was, and so we just don't talk. And I would never do that to my children. Like, I'm here to explain and to apologize and to bend over backwards and, you know, do the best I can telling them, you know, what it is and what we've done.
My mother would fly into rages every once in a while, and for no reason, like, it would be disconnected with reality. And I will never forget the one time she apologized to me. And that one time she apologized to me and she said the words, "That was not about you and I'm sorry. That was not about you and you. I shouldn't have done that to you." That one apology, though, it carried me through, like, the rest. I think I was, like, probably 12 years old when that happened. I swear to God, it carried me through life. So I'm so happy that you mentioned that, because I just recognized that for myself, too,
that's
how powerful
great.
That
that's
was.
Great. That's great to hear from you. No, I think that's really true. I mean, honestly, I feel like with my father, if he could just say that to me, and I don't mean to be, like you know, hijacking him. Like, I just want some acknowledgement of how hard it was for me. And I can't really. So, yeah, I think that is important. And even thinking about it, like, I don't know if I do. I have one child. I'm not sure I've done that enough to, you know, it's complicated, ongoing. I'm really grateful that I'm still around for them to do that, you know, and to be there. So, you know, I guess the answer, holding a kid's pain, yeah, I think try and have a little bit of humor and a little bit of distance. You also have to always remember with kids, I remember learning this early on, that it just keeps changing. Like, everything in life keeps changing. You know, you think, like, I have four kids, so you think, like, one's always going to be the difficult one. And that's just not true. Next year it'll be someone else. Like, they are always evolving, just like we are. And so you think some, you know, you think some situation, you know, I mean, it's very hard when you first go through their first heartbreaks.
Oh my God, I can't imagine.
So sad to see, like, your 16-year-old daughter's heartbroken. Oh, but, you know, you get through it. Like, and you have to teach them that you're going to get through it, that we all get through stuff. We just keep going. So.
Right, and you're modeling for them now, even how you...
Yes, I mean, they're a big part of the reason I'm also trying to be alone right now, because I feel like I really have modeled to them until now this kind of leapfrogging, you know, one man to the next thing, and I just don't want to do it. And I feel like it is, one of my daughters has been very good about stepping off the relationship train, but all of my, for the most part, everyone in my family does this thing, and, you know, they've learned it from me, I guess. I mean, their dad does it too. But so, yeah, I'm aware of the modeling for sure.
Yeah, that relationship train is so common. I have not done that, and I guess you're exactly right. Like, I was modeled to not do that. So if that has been modeled for you, it's kind of hard to see a different way. But I go years in relationships and years out of relationships, and I think people didn't understand that for the longest time. It's like, no, I don't actually want to be in a relationship that's not, you know, great. Whatever.
Right.
I'm not saying, oh, my God, that implied that all my relationships have been these, you know, these things that one should aspire to. But, I mean... I honestly do believe they've all been perfect for whatever they are, which is like your this recent short marriage. Don't you think it was perfect for what it was? You may not see it in enough hindsight, perhaps, but
no, probably not. I mean, I'm sure I will. I mean, there were very good things about it for sure. So
yeah,
it is. you know, it's just, it is what it is.
Well, okay, I just, again, just have to fully acknowledge, and I want to inspire anybody that's listening who the group is for over 40, right?
Yes, you have to be a woman over 40 to join. Search on Facebook for "What Would Virginia Woolf Do?" And then you get asked a couple questions, which we appreciate if you answer them, and then we accept you.
I know, I was so nervous. I was biting my – I came home from that event, or I think I might have done it even in the car, like tried to join the group, and I was like, oh, my God, maybe I didn't answer the questions correctly. I was all tense and nervous that I wouldn't be accepted. And everybody should definitely get the book, What Would Virginia Woolf Do? And Other Questions I Ask Myself as I Attempt to Age Without Apology. It is hilarious. It is wise. It is great. And it is, and you did a lot of research, obviously. It's not just, I want to say for anybody that's listening that it's not just a compilation of what's happening over on the Facebook group.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to speak to that, please do.
Yeah, no, it really is. First of all, it's really my story and not so much the story of the group at all, although I do quote some Wolfers and I quote lots of experts. But it's really kind of part resource, part memoir. It's my story of aging. So while the group goes up to kind of women in their 70s and so, I would say the book is ideally targeted for women kind of 40 to 60. It's a little bit like, I don't know, well, you didn't have children, but for a lot of us who had children, The Girlfriend's Guide to Pregnancy, it's got that. But
that's exactly what it is, The Girlfriend's Guide to Aging. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
and
like
to
that.
Perimenopause and menopause. Yeah.
Perimenopause and menopause. And so, and it is, actually, I was honestly really surprised by it. I was surprised that I wrote a funny book, and I was surprised how, in the end, honestly, how kind of well-researched. There's a lot of information in there, and we had doctors read it and make sure it was all accurate. And, you know, so and it's kind of broken up into subjects, you know, predictable kind of body, health, fashion, beauty, sex, depression, empty nest, that kind of stuff, work, money.
There really is something for everybody that's, like you said, between 40 and 60 and possibly younger as they are moving toward that time. It's real. I think it would be so exciting to know about perimenopause before it actually hits.
I wish I had known for sure. Oh,
I know, me too. What is this weird thing that my body is doing? Like an alien is inside of me and it's really, really hot alien. It's hot alien.
My current joke about it is, honestly, I think I would have drank more if had I known that, like, once you hit, like, 45, you really can't drink alcohol anymore without totally paying for it. That's a bummer.
Oh, my God. That is so true. Yeah, so even if you're in your 30s, check it out. It's hilarious and totally – it's also inspiring in places and very informative. It is like reading it's like reading a really funny medical book too, like, like, because you do learn so much by the end. You have so much knowledge. And then I have congratulations on the new book coming out February 5th, just after my book comes out in 2019.
Well, I want to read your book too. I
think I'll probably send you Galleys and see what your thoughts are on
it. My address. I'd love to read it.
That would be great. And then again, and then finally, this came out in 2016, but Whatever Happened to Interracial Love, stories, by, Nina's mom, Kathleen Collins, and edited, did you edit them or did you just curate them?
I did actually edit them, although it's not written in the book. My name is not in the book, but I did actually edit them and titled it and everything. Yeah.
Okay, great. So, again, I just want to acknowledge you. Thank you for creating the community. Thank you for writing the book. Thank you for helping us hold our hearts and hold each other's hearts. And if anybody, you know, if anybody is battling with feeling disempowered or feeling depressed even or just not out of sorts in any way, I highly recommend jumping into the group, and because it will make you being a contribution to someone else is such a heart-mending tool. Also, I think you have the opportunity to hop on that Facebook group at any moment and make a difference possibly in somebody else's life, which is so heartwarming and so beautiful. So
lovely. That's really, really nice of you. Thank you. That's great.
That's true. And so that's why I wanted to have you on, because you are a superhero of love. So thank Thank you, Nina, for making time, especially while you're on vacation and you're supposed to be rejuvenating. I hope this was a teeny tiny bit.
It's really fun. Thank you very much.
Good. Have a wonderful, wonderful rest of your vacation.
All right.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, superheroes, for coming to listen to Nina Loez Collins. Is she a superhero or what? If you like the podcast, please do me a huge favor and go rate it on iTunes. I appreciate you all. Lots of love. Have a great day.